Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
And before we get into the show here, we actually have a big announcement to make. This show is now brought to you by Strike Force Energy. A veteran-owned energy drink company. I've had a subscription of it for a long time. It's like I said, it's probably one of the best things. Like I said, I'm a caffeine addict, and this stuff just comes in a little pouch, pour it straight in water or beer, liquor, whatever you want to mix it with. It'll mix with damn near anything, even with sweet tea. It kind of tastes like an Arnold Palmer when you do that because it's got a very lemony flavor to it. And now they are sponsors of this show, which means not only does it benefit us, but if you want to help us out and help yourself out, they offer anything from a 50-cal ammo can full of drink pouches to a 750-milliliter pump bottle with 100 doses in it, and also subscription services where you can, like I said, if you love this stuff like we do, they'll actually send it to you on a monthly basis. And what you do is, when you go on their website to order your Strike Force, use the promo code Cigar Nerds. You'll get 20% off of your order, even on subscription services. So try it out, help us out, and help out everyone else. Like I said, it is a veteran-owned company, and we always like to support those, and especially ones that are supporting us as well.
Absolutely. And that website can be found at strikeforceenergy.com.
And with that, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we are smoking, I would say, probably one of the most rare cigars I can think of just because of how limited you can produce this. But this is the CAO Amazon Basin.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about the cigar when we were interviewing Ricky Rodriguez. And the tobacco that goes into this cigar is only harvested once every 3 years from a small, plot of land in the Amazon jungle, and this stuff is literally shipped to the factory like on a canoe. Like there's no like cars that get to where this place is at. They ship the tobacco after it's fermented for 6 months in the jungle, ship it out on freaking canoes and stuff. So this is definitely a hard to get tobacco to put in these cigars.
But it is a really good tobacco. And I mean, this tobacco, I mean, it's, basically cultivated in undisturbed soil, very like almost organic in the way that it's, grown and everything. So, when people talk about, the purity of a cigar versus a lot of the chemicals and stuff like that found in cigarettes, I mean, I think that this cigar right here is probably one of the truer of, it just a damn good smoke. I mean, I'm going to say this is probably a good medium full.
Yeah, very earthy flavors so far. And it, has an Ecuadorian Sumatra wrapper, Nicaraguan binder, and filler is a blend of Dominican, Colombian, and that Brazilian Braganasa tobaccos. And speaking of the Brazilian jungles and whatnot, Strike Force Energy does ship worldwide. So if you're on a small tobacco farm in the middle of the Amazon, I'm sure somebody can find you and drop off some Strike Force for you.
Yes.
Just to keep it all, sponsor related.
Just bring it full circle, man.
Yeah. And, speaking of someone who's probably spent some time in a jungle a time or two, this is our second annual at this point James Bond special. Last time we talked about, our newest Bond, Daniel Craig. So now we're kind of going, back in line to the previous Bond, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, and we'll get into this in greater detail in the main segment. But, Pierce Brosnan. I think he is probably one of my favorite Bonds.
Yeah, but besides Sean Connery, he's probably one of the better Bonds.
I just, you know, it's such an interesting dynamic, and you know, he's quirky, he's a badass. He's a guy I'd like to have a beer with.
Yeah. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
See reflections on the water, more than darkness in the depths. See him surface and never a shadow. On the wind I feel his breath. Golden eye, I found his weakness. Golden eye, he'll do what I please. Golden eye, no time for sweetness, but a bitter kiss will bring him to his knees.
And welcome back to the podcast. So this week we're going to, you know, talk about another Bond on the list of Bonds. Since there's
Gold Bond?
Not Gold Bond. Not Covalent Bond.
Damn it.
James Bond.
Diamond Bond. Shine bright like a diamond. Well, that's later on in the Bond series.
Yeah, and like I said, we're kind of moving backward through history. Last year, about this time, we did our Daniel Craig episode. So now we're to the previous Bond in the lineup, Mr. Pierce Brosnan, yeah, a.k.a. Remington Steele.
Yeah, and I really like, you know, the Pierce Brosnan, you know, version of Bond is, I mean, dude, just an absolute pimp. He's the type of guy that I love to just sit down and have a beer and a cigar with. And not double cross them.
Yeah, there's definitely some differences in, I mean,
his feng shui.
But like I said, if you look at the Daniel Craig super gritty reboot of Bond, Pierce was the last of the like Roger Moore-esque Bonds, where there's like comedy and smartassness, and you know, and there's like a certain formula to it where, you know, you got to have Q giving you some cool ass gadgets at least halfway through the movie. There's, you know, Bond banging chicks right and left, making jokes and wisecracks, and all the Bond girls have, you know, sort of sexual indo or at least some kind of funny name. No one has a regular name in a Bond film. So this was like the last of that old school Bond we had been getting since, you know, the 60s up through, you know, now. And before the dark, gritty, realistic version of Bond we've dealt with for the last four movies.
Yeah, I mean, it was refreshing to go back and watch, you know, a lot of these Bond films. I mean, shit, dude. I'm sure we talked about it the last time, but you can't talk about, you know, freaking James Bond without Nintendo 64's GoldenEye, 007, everything, you know, as well. So, you know, it was a refreshing blast to the past. And, you know, I mean, as a guy, I'd almost like to model my own life after, you know? There's wit and there's wager.
Yeah. I mean, and he smoked cigars, too, there's at least a couple cigars throughout, you know, the Pierce Brosnan era Bonds. I mean, he even goes to Cuba, and we'll get to that when we start talking about
The World Is Not Enough. Die Another Day. Yeah,
you know, the one you keep forgetting.
There's so many. I've had a long day. Don't pick on me.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan was one of those guys that, you know, could have always been rumored to play Bond, but his schedule would not allow it because he was still under contract playing Remington Steele, which in itself is a badass name.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of up there with Bond, James Bond, Remington Steele. That's like one of the most like manly names you can come up with.
Man, bear, pig.
Yeah, that, and he's an Irishman playing a Scotsman working for the British government. Dude's got, you know, levels to his skill.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, it's, you know, the European, you know, aspect of the films, I think, is one of the things that, you know, like, definitely a lot different than if it was an American, you know, playing a, you know, you would see the Americans just go straight balls to the wall. But here it's like, no, I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to, you know, plan out all of these things, put the balls in motion, and, you know, just watch the pieces fall exactly where I intend them. And there's a method to the madness.
And that was the thing, too, you know, just like, you know, you have to do everything with style. And, you know, like I said, if this was an American agent, he would be like dual-wielding freaking Beretta 92s or something and shooting the piss out of everybody instead of this little bitty Walther 380, which is like, you know, not... Yeah, it's a backup gun. It's not your primary weapon, but like, you know.
If I was going to a gunfight, that would be my, oh shit, I'm on my backup now.
Yeah, but, you know, in Bond's world of being, even though he is, you know, licensed to kill and all that stuff, if he has to draw his weapon, he's screwed up. Because he's supposed to be, you know, in and out, nobody knew he was ever there type of deal, so...
Sure, but most of the time, people knew he was there before he even knew he was there.
Of course, because he always walked in. Hi, my name's Bond, James Bond. Yes. You know, the guy that's busted up shit for, like, the last 40 years. Y'all know me. Like, you know, some, you know, rapper walking up in the club. But for
you
some
know
reason,
who it is?
You know, no one ever knows knows who he is.
You're not my boy. So... you know, you want to go ahead and jump into talking a little bit about GoldenEye?
Before we get into GoldenEye, let's take 1 second to talk about why the Pierce Brosnan era is a little bit different. For one, all the previous Bond movies had been based on novels by Ian Fleming. They never always stuck to the story of it, but most of them were inspired by and at least loosely related to the novels. But eventually, with anything, you run out of novels. So this... GoldenEye was the first James Bond movie not based on an Ian Fleming novel. You know, and everything we've had since then has been like an original creation by somebody who was trying to mirror that Ian Fleming style. But yeah, so this was the first time that, you know, we were getting an original story. And but the name was, you know, inspired by, like I said, GoldenEye was a Jamaican estate where Ian Fleming wrote all these books that these movies are based on. So they still try to pull a little something, you know, references or lines from the books just to give it a title, even though it has nothing to do with any actual storyline. And that, and also this is the first Bond movie post-Cold War. Like previously, Russia could always be the bad guy.
Yep.
Or, you know, China or whatever. But, you know, in this era of, I wouldn't say world peace, but at least... more sense of cooperation, you know, more open world where we weren't dealing with the Cold War era that previous Bonds had to deal with. So his villains were, you know,
basically these
large corrupt politicians,
business tycoons.
Yeah, greedy business tycoons, you know, shit like that instead of the traditional, you know, terrorist and or enemy government.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Die Another Day, I think, is about the one, you know, because you've got the, you know, North Koreans involved with the general and stuff like that and the demilitarized zone. So I think that was about the only one that truly, you know.
Yeah, we'll argue that point when we get there. But the first one.
Oh, there's not going to be an argument, motherfucker. I already won.
Yeah, the first of the Pierce Brosnan James Bond movies came out in 1995 after a 6-year hiatus for the character, and we got, you know, like I said, GoldenEye, which still is probably one of my favorite of the newer Bond movies. I guess because just it was the first time seeing, because I grew up on Roger Moore, and the last couple Bonds aren't that good. We'll talk shit about them when we get to their episode, but this was the first Bond that was like, oh shit, this is like some old school.
I mean, he was a playboy, and, you know...
This is like a better-looking Roger Moore. With a little bit of Sean Connery in there, because every once in a while he gets a little mad and, like, you know, slaps people around. But this was probably the best, you know, one of the best portrayals of Bond.
Yes.
Yeah, 1995's GoldenEye, directed by Martin Campbell. And, Made for $58 million, made $352 million. And pretty much, like I said, since it took so long, because apparently there was some kind of legal issues over some rights and such, the previous Bond, like, no longer wanted to be involved. And he come in, and pretty much they recast everyone. This is our first female M with Dame Judi Dench. But the only person really to return from the Bond series, that's the one constant in pretty much all the Bond movies, is freaking Q.
Yes.
Like I said, because pretty much he was, you know, doing Bond until he died. But yeah, like I said, they every few years they replace the Bond, but it's always freaking Q.
Yeah, I mean,
Bond never ages. Q gets old as shit.
You know, it was, and I almost hate to draw this comparison, but you know, Q was almost as, you know, a momentous character as, you know, Stanley in modern Marvel movies, I would say.
Yeah, it, like, wasn't a James Bond movie unless you had Q make an appearance.
Yes.
Because he was pretty much there from the beginning. Yeah, I think he just had like a brief appearance in like some of the first movies where he brings Bond his gun. Because they switch him to the famous Walther PPK in the very first movie. And Q's the one that comes in to issue him his sidearms. But then it just kept getting bigger and bigger, where there's always that sequence somewhere in the movie where, you know, Bond's getting ready to, we've introduced the bad guys and Bond's getting ready to go out and start his stuff. So we have to go visit Q Branch and get all the toys that are going to be, gadgets, in this mission.
Yeah, man. And the gadgets are such a pivotal, and it's crazy too, because it's not like, you know, super far-fetched like get.
No,
like,
that's one thing about the Bond series.
Almost like
is,
practical in a sense.
Yeah, you know, they always try to keep it true to, like, I've read books on, you know, British, you know, MI6, you know, gadgets and stuff that have been declassified, and it's almost as ridiculous as some of the stuff that Q actually makes. But yeah, like in this one, he got the that was another weird thing about the, you know, Bond has always drove English, you know, the freaking Aston Martin. Well, these movies got a little bit more, I guess, corporate influences, because he switched cars. Yes. to the BMW throughout his until like the last movie of his. But yeah, the next three movies he's all driving different BMWs. With just one was the Z3 or something like that, which was like badass. All the rich hippies had to have that when this movie came out. Everyone's like, oh my god, I gotta get that BMW Roadster.
It was, you know, freaking, I mean, it's still, you know, an iconic car today in modern time, you know. I mean, the fucking Z3 little coupe, I mean, just
stinger missiles behind the headlights, if you want to, you know, as Bond says, you know, just shooting around.
Almost redefines the meaning of shooting the shit.
And the freaking laser watch and the exploding grenade pin.
I do like the exploding grenade pin.
And I love the, because they'd always kind of played up the whole Bond Q relationship, but I always loved these movies with the interaction with Pierce and what's his name? Desmond Llewellyn, who played Q. Because it was just such, it was like almost like a short comedy skit in the middle of the movie.
I mean, that was the thing, is, you know, there was a well balance. I mean, the scripting was awesome. I mean, dude, there were so many great Bond lines that you're just like, I wish I had, you know, the tailored suit and everything and the persona to be able to pull that off and just basically make any woman swoon there on the spot. But
I just love when he's demonstrating the pin grenade, and it blows up the mannequin, and he's like, don't say it. And Bond's like, the writing's all over the wall. He's like, yeah, and thanks to me also is the rest of him.
Oh.
So the story of GoldenEye, like I said, it's Bond during the Cold War. It, like, starts off with the 80s Bond, because there's always a pre-title sequence.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta have that prelude.
Yeah, where basically he was on a mission during the Cold War to blow up a Russian bioweapons facility, and his partner ends up getting killed. And jump years later, where now it's a post-Cold War era, and Bond is almost like a relic of a more dangerous era, where now it's, you know, like the new M is trying to make it all about statistics and, you know, a much friendlier, safer world, and doesn't think, you know, Bond has a place in it, but still his methods are what's necessary at certain points.
I mean, it's almost a proven scientific formula. Like, why do you want to, like, the cake tastes great. You get the results you want. Why mess with the ingredients?
Yeah, so a Russian crime syndicate steals a Russian Cold War, basically EMP weapon that can wipe out all technology. And it turns out it's his former partner, you know, with a vengeance about, because it apparently is.
You left me for dead.
And his family was this group of Russians that were betrayed by the government and kind of left out in the wind. His family was killed and no one really knew this. So he is Alex Trevelyan is now, which Sean Bean, who dies in, you know, just about every movie he's in, gets to die twice in this movie.
That's a hell of a way to go. Like, well, you know, we're going to give you a pass on that first death, so...
We're just going to bring you back and let you get thrown off this giant freaking satellite dish.
Yeah. Have fun. It's a long way down. Don't forget to bring a parachute.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I like this film, you know, just for, you know, some of the action standpoints. And, it, you know, it was interesting, you know, having his partner turned out to be the big bad and stuff like that. Because originally, like, I didn't see it necessarily playing out that way when I first watched the film.
Because, you know, it looks like it's that Russian general that had killed his friend was the new big bad, who was, like, you know, secretly someone who wanted it to go back to the Cold War and didn't like this whole, you know, democratic government, and was trying to kind of take things over himself. But no, really, he was just a puppet of this, you know, Janus crime syndicate, which, you know, made him think that they're like politically biased, but really they're just going to, you know, steal a bunch of money and wipe, you know, ruin England's financial things.
And I love how, you know, most of the villains will use, you know, Bond's playboy-esque ways to send in, you know, the freaking undercover, you know, female, you know, that's going to, you know, try to take advantage of Bond and, you know, the heat of the moment and stuff like that, and, you know, put him in all the peril.
Yeah, speaking of that's another thing that was kind of new about this era of Bond is we got female villains. Like, we never really had female villains in previous Bond films, you know, with a few exceptions. And usually, even if they were a villain, Bond would seduce them and flip them before the end of the movie.
Yes.
And this movie introduced us to Famke Janssen, one of the hottest Russians. Like, I had a crush on her from the moment freaking, no pun intended, I saw her in Golden.
Are you talking about the thigh crush?
Yes. Xena on the top. In the, you know, long tradition of, you know, innuendo Bond names. Whose weapon of choice is to seduce men to death.
Hell of a way to go.
Oh, yeah.
God rest their soul.
I did like kind of like the weird fact that, like, the when you first see her, she's dating this admiral and basically using him to get his identification so they can steal this stealth helicopter to use it to steal the GoldenEye satellite. But it's a Canadian admiral. It's like, we don't really want to piss off the Americans. so we're going to make this guy that we're going to make fun of Canadian.
Just blame Canada.
Yeah.
That helicopter is pretty fucking impressive, too.
Yeah.
Just the whole heist and everything else. I mean, there's, I don't know, just so much quality action. I mean, it's over the top, but it's not so over the top, but it, you know, that you don't necessarily think that could almost happen. Although I don't know about, you know, we'll talk about it later, but.
Yeah. Also in this movie, we had Joe Baker as CIA officer Jack Wade, which completely hilarious. Is like, you know, he's like, when Bond first shows up, you know, and they're kind of making fun of that whole Cold War thing where Bond's, like, you know, trying to do the passcode. And he's like, yes, you know, this is a spring month in London. He's like, yeah, but here in Russia, it's cold as shit. You and your stiff-ass Brits with your code words and your fancy toys. Yes. He starts giving him shit.
And I like it, too, because this was the first film where, you know, Bond ends up in Cuba. And I don't know what it is about Bond going to Cuba, but it kind of makes me wish I went to Cuba.
Yeah, because that's where the GoldenEye satellite radio station they're trying to use is. Well, in the movie, it's Cuba. It's actually the Puerto Rican SETI satellite dish, radio telescope, whatever it's called. Yeah, and we also had Alan Cumming as the whatever turned hacker guy that, you know, ended up helping out Janice and was controlling the satellite. Which that scene with him when he like picks up Bond's pen and is like just nervously clicking it and like and you're like, oh crap, is it armed?
You know
is
it's gonna
unarmed?
Blow up
is
or
it
something.
Armed? It's unarmed. And then when he goes off and the freaking whatever liquid nitrogen just like freezes him and is like, yeah, dude. Rusty's saying, I'm invincible, I've survived. Nope.
No. Spoke too soon. Yeah, that would be one thing. Like, if I had to capture Bond, like, I'd be like, I don't want to touch anything because you just don't know what the hell you're going to trigger.
Yeah, it's like...
Hashtag triggered.
Damn. I think my other... what the hell is his name? One of my other favorite characters that they introduced in this Bond film that was made appearances in, like, the next two or three movies... was Robbie Coltrane as Valentin Dmitrievich Zhukovsky, which was an ex-KBG agent turned gangster that, you know, 007 has to go get some assistance and some intelligence from. And I love, like, that first meeting where he just walks in and, like, sticks the gun in his head and cocks it. And he's like, just from the sound of the gun, he's like, Walther PPK. I believe, I only know, he's like, what was it? Walther PPK. I only know three men that carry that gun, and I've killed two of them. Bond, how are you doing?
Could that be a thing? What? Like, I mean, all right, the racking up a 12-gauge, all right, I guess anybody can guess it, you know, but just the cock of a pistol, you know, would there be enough sound distinction to the trained ear to actually be able to, you know, like, oh, that was a Glock, or no, that was a, you know, a Springfield or a Kimber, like.
I don't know, but it makes a cool, like, scene in a movie. Yes. Whether it oh.
I almost want to take, like, a mini, like, quick, bring all the guns.
Let's do a blind comparison.
It's like, oh, that frequency, I know it. That had to be a 1911.
Oh. Yeah, and after, like I said, and not only did the other thing that we spoke on earlier, GoldenEye inspired the GoldenEye 007 video game, which I'm not even sure if that's the first James Bond video game, but it's probably the one that every gamer knows. Because that was probably one of the first console first-person shooters. Like, I remember playing Doom and stuff on, like, PC, but as far as a console, that's, like, the first, like, 3D first-person shooter that I had ever played. And not only that, it was, you know, licensed by the movie and had the images of, you know, the people in the movie. You
yeah,
know,
I
on,
mean, you recognize the characters,
yeah.
the you know, the whole nine yards.
And you got to be Bond and go through the missions that you had watched, you know, on screen. You even get the whole, like, you know, shooting the guy in the toilet when you're sneaking into the damn thing, which is yes. One of my favorite things.
Got you with your pants down. Now you're dead.
I don't know why, as a kid, finding a toilet in a video game always was amusing. Especially in, what was it, some later Doom games or something. Or I know in, was it, some of the computer games, you could actually walk up and hit your space bar and it would flush the toilet.
Yes.
That I'm consistently five in my head, so, like, for some reason that always, like, cracked me up to be able to flush a toilet in a video game.
Well, it's good that you can act your age.
Yeah, fuck you. Yeah, this is before, you know, playing, you know, online against each other where you're, you know, doing the GoldenEye split screen and, you know, if you talk
four
shit,
ways.
You had to be...
Four ways.
Yeah, you had to be in the room to talk shit and You took what you got.
Yeah. Man, I can remember, like, you know, in two-player split
screen?
Yes. You know, like, making a cardboard cutout and, like, putting over, like, the break. So, you know, that way, like, people couldn't see, you know, where on the map you are and stuff like that. Just try to add that additional, you know, level of difficulty or element of surprise, or to minimize the, oh, you're by the toilet. I know where the toilet is.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, that brings us to our next Bond movie.
Tomorrow Never Dies. From 1997.
Same year the game came out.
Yes.
GoldenEye came out. This one was directed by Roger Spottiswoode and made $333 million at the box office.
Which wasn't bad. I mean, you know, it was on a $110 million budget. Blah. Jeez. Numbers. Math. The world is so confusing.
And this one, too, like I said, with, yeah, we don't have longer had the Cold War enemies. This one's about, you know, a corrupt media person, which, you know, kind of
you know, it's really,
what everyone assumes media people are.
Well, you know, I was watching, you know, this, and I was like, how true is this of, like, almost my perception of media today? Like,
yeah.
You know, where it's like, all right, somehow you're reporting the news on a story that hasn't even, you know, happened yet. Like,
yeah, because basically there's a big, you know, media conglomerate guy, Elliot Carver, who basically gets exclusive rights to broadcast news in China. So he is trying to, you know, the British government love him, the Chinese government love him. You know, and he's basically trying to start World War III so he can cover it for his news agencies.
Well, he was, you know, actually trying to create a war between China and the UK, you know, to get the exclusive rights to broadcast in Beijing and stuff. But, you know, it just, I don't know, you know, because what was happening was the Chinese government wouldn't let him broadcast, so he was trying to create his own government.
Well, he had already, like, built, like, you know, a studio in China and stuff.
Well,
and
I mean, he had, but he just didn't have the means to broadcast.
So, yeah, basically he steals a ship GPS thing and modifies it so the ship is, you know, off course when it and is actually in Chinese waters when it doesn't believe it is, and so that starts a whole thing, and then he ends up, you know, sinking the ship.
Yeah, basically frames the Chinese for, you know, shooting at the ship, and then it's like,
and then he ends up shooting down like a Japanese plane and blaming it on the, and he's trying to escalate this thing with this whole, like, stealth ship that nobody can see and causing all these tensions. Well, yeah, they send Bond in to investigate, and he also runs into Colonel Weylin, played by Michelle Yeoh, basically his Chinese counterpart, who's both trying to figure out what the fuck's going on with this Carver guy.
Once again, badass female role. Like, just some of the martial... And that's the thing, is Bond doesn't use a whole lot of martial arts, but
yeah,
it
he's
seems
more of
to
like
be,
a brawler.
You know, like, these random people that he finds just, you know, exceptional at martial arts. So it's an interesting dynamic between, like you said, you know, his, you know, brawler versus, you know, their very technical, you know, fighting styles.
And this also had the lovely Terry Hatcher from what was it, Lois and Clark, as Paris Carver, a former girlfriend of Bond and now married to, you know, the evil Elliot Carver.
Yes.
Which, in true Bond fashion, he seduces her to get information, and then she gets executed by her husband, much like, you know, many former Bond girls before her.
Yeah, it's like, you know what happens to girls that date me, right?
Yeah. If you're having sex with Bond early in the movie, you're probably going to die. It's always the second chick that survives.
Maybe that's why we don't have any Bond juniors running around. It's a hell of a mean of birth control. Nobody wanted to say it.
It was like a line in GoldenEye when I forgot someone's like telling me, he's like, you don't need a gun. And he's like, that depends on your definition of safe sex.
Yes.
But yeah, one of the things in this, also in this movie, that kind of, the thing that kind of pissed me off about one of the downsides of the Pierce Brosnan James Bond is he switched up the gun. Like halfway through the movie, he's unarmed and he picks up the new Walther P99 9mm and uses that through the rest of his run as Bond, you know, with the new Walther. And it's like, freaking James Bond supposed to be carrying a PPK. Like,
ah, but we got the new and improved with an additional fire-stopping power.
Yeah, no, it's no
bueno. I mean, you just said, you know, it was a backup gun. I mean, he's like, oh, I want to get something.
Still, it's such an iconic weapon for James Bond that seeing him without is just like, this is wrong.
It's almost like MIB and seeing Will Smith without the cricket.
Yeah. And when Daniel Craig took over and went back to old school Bond, the PPK came back. They'd done away with that whole Walther P99 shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a design flaw.
But I did like the exploding. Well, that's the next movie.
Wait, there is explosions in this movie, too.
That whole sequence with them on the motorcycle handcuffed together and having to basically fight as one, that is probably one of the coolest. Like, that's another thing you always get in a Bond film is a badass car chase. You know, in GoldenEye, it was a tank chase.
Yes.
But, yeah, like I said, in this one, you know, it's a BMW motorcycle chase with helicopters and everything else chasing them. And them two, like, handcuffed together, having to fight and switch positions on the bike. And so, it was, like I said, it was one of the most awesome sequences of the movie.
It's like, quick, clutch, gas. All right, on front. Don't get any ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was an interesting. And then after that, we got The World Is Not Enough.
Yes.
Came out in 1999. Directed by Michael Apted.
Yeah, and this one was on a budget of $135 million and made a little over $361 million, actually closer to $362 million in the box office. So,
and again, since this one's not, you know, based on a book, they actually took the name of it is from a line from the novel On Her Majesty's Secret Service, where apparently that's the Bond family crest. The family motto is "The world is not enough."
Ah,
and I think he even makes that joke at one point. Yeah. where the bad girl in this one has got him tied up. And she's like, I could have gave you the world. He's like, well, the world is not enough. Electric King. And he's like, I forgot what her response is. He's like, yeah, it's kind of a family motto.
But yeah, I mean, this one here, so you got the British oil tycoon, you know, basically trying to buy a, you know, freaking stolen report for, you know, MI6. Who was killed.
Yeah, and his daughter was kidnapped by this terrorist named Renault, who basically, they shot him, and the way that it damaged his brain, he cannot feel pain, or so he's actually, you know, almost like a Superman until he finally, the bullet finally kills him.
Yeah, because it's going through the habla mangata.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you know, this is the one where, you know, we get, they blow up MI6 with this booby-trapped money, and you get this badass, like, you know, boat chase.
Which is really, like, the whole escape attempt with a hot air balloon. Like, if I was going to try to get away from something, I don't know that a hot air balloon would be the way I would go.
It's like, all right, we can see them. Let's just follow them till they land. Not the best thought-out plan. I mean, I'm pretty sure she could have ran and found a car or something, but no, we're going to jump in the hot air balloon.
Which made a pretty sweet explosion.
Beginning in that was also kind of cool using her as the ultimate weapon against Bond because, you know, that character we see earlier when he's first trying to make the money exchange to get the money back, you know, he's, you know, beating up this Swiss banker. Yeah, trying to get some information, and he pays no attention to the secretary, and the secretary ends up killing him before he can, like, confess, because, you know, he's expecting the dudes with guns. He's not expecting the secretary in the corner taking notes to pull out a knife and stab the dude in the back of the head.
Yes. dude, the knife play was freaking insane in this film. I want to, you know, I've always fucking loved people that are really good with throwing knives. That to me, like, just to be able to sit there and, like, all right, there's a mark, and across the room, just dead on, like, not even thinking about it. That's impressive sheet.
Yeah. But we also have, like I said, the daughter who takes over the company, who was kidnapped by Renault. Turns out, no, she flipped him, and now he's working for her. And, you know, again, we get, you know, a girl bad guy who's also a... in this movie, a corrupt businesswoman. It's like, so we ran out of good villains in the mid-90s. We couldn't pick on Russia anymore, and we didn't really have the Islamic terrorism that we're currently fighting. So it's like, who do we fight that we don't want to piss off? So business people, oil tycoons, media guys, and former assassins turned traitor.
Shining bright like a diamond.
That's the next movie.
I know. And that was foreshadowing.
Yeah. And also, you always have to have the strong female Bond girl. And this one we have Dr. Christmas Jones, who is disarming former nuclear weapons. And who is the nuclear expert that has to play by Denise Richards, of all people.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought the freaking, the skiing thing was pretty cool, but, once they hopped on, like, the freaking snowmobiles with the paragliders, that shit was just awesome.
Oh, yeah, whole sequence was just ridiculous. And then later on, when Bond goes to question his old buddy, Zukoski, who's now running has a casino and is running a, caviar factory.
Yes.
And they get attacked with these tree trimming helicopters that have these giant, like, freaking saw blades hanging from the bottom. That whole sequence was just absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. And you knew that was going to happen. As soon as you seen Bond driving down the road and he looks at the helicopters trimming the trees along the power lines, you're like, yeah, that's foreshadowing. That's going to come back at some point.
You're going to not want a convertible.
Yeah. I was thinking, that's the other thing. A Bond car almost can never survive a movie. It has to eventually do something cool and then eventually gets blowed up. And it's probably one of the best, like, car death sequences is he takes out the helicopter with the hidden missiles. Well, there's one, another helicopter comes right behind him and, like, literally cuts the car, like, straight up the middle and it just splits in two.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I almost feel as bad for the cars as I do some of the individuals. Because I'm like, that's a really expensive, really nice car.
Yeah, and, hanging out with Q, he's always like, would you at least for once try to bring the equipment back in the condition it was given to you?
But, I mean, that's one of the underlying themes is he's, Q is always giving Bond shit. Like, out of all of the agents, you're the only one that has not managed to return something.
Yeah, and he's like, look what you did to my my fishing boat for my retirement. And of course, Q's idea of a retired fishing boat has missile launchers and turbojets.
And it can also, act as a makeshift submarine and everything as well.
Like, yeah.
I don't know what the hell you're going to be fishing with, but...
Fish whatever you want with it.
If you want to catch the fish, you must be the fish.
And speaking of retirement, this was the last movie that Desmond was in as Q. And they kind of, he died shortly after this film was released, was involved in a car accident, like, not long after the premiere. But in this one, kind of weird that they, showed his retirement and then he passed away soon after this movie. And they, tried to introduce, what's his name? John Cleese as Q's replacement. Who Bond jokes, like, if you're Q, is this R? And he's such a dork, trying to, like, explain the equipment. He's like, it has zippers. This is how you operate a zipper. And Q's like, just pull the fucking cord.
Yeah, it's funny, like, he's so detail-oriented. But at the same time, like, I almost feel like he's trying to make Bond, like, feel like a dumbass. Yeah. And
he's like, yeah, this car has missiles and guns and things, and also six cup holders. but yeah.
I mean, for the man on a goat.
Exactly.
You can never have enough cup holders.
But that sequence with Q and Bond right there where they, you know, speak on him retiring. I love kind of like the out they give me because he's like, you're not retiring anytime soon, are you? And he's like, and he turns around. He has like, you know, because most of the time those two are always giving each other shit. And it's like probably the most, one of the most real moments between them in a Bond movie. And he's like, listen, there's two things I've always tried to teach you. One, never let them see you bleed. And he's like, and the other, always have an escape plan. And then freaking like goes down the little hatch and stuff.
Yeah, that was a fitting, you know. Damn. Such a good movie. Like, yeah. Just there. I don't know. Like, I mean, like, as badass as Bond is, like, he didn't seem necessarily larger than life. Like, no. He seemed like he could almost be the type of guy, you know, hell, vote, you know, fucking Brosnan as a, you know, most interesting man in the world. Like,
yeah.
Because that's very much the feeling I got out of, you know, this entire series.
And that was the thing, too. This is, like, the first, you know, time Bond has really gone up against a female villain as the main villain. Like, you know, Xena on the top, you know, he kind of killed her in battle, but when
kinda, it's like, I'm gonna crush you against this tree, but
still, like, she was trying to kill him at the moment. Yeah. But in this one, like, said Bond shoots an unarmed woman and kind of like, you know, feels bad for about it for like a second and then goes on about his business because that's what Bond does, because, you know.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I mean, save the world a lot of drama. A lot of drama.
But this is one of those, like, you know, she, you know, Bond's one that, you know, no one can manipulate, but, you know, she kind of got to him, you know, when she kind of fakes the whole being freaked out when the people are trying to kill her and whatnot, you know, he kind of falls for her there for a minute and lets her in before he realizes, like, oh, this bitch is trouble because, you know, she... You know, Renault's quoting her exactly, and, you know, and he's starting to get not as secure in his own decisions, because, you know, when he comes back, he doesn't arrest her or stop her then. He's like, yeah, because he's dead set that, like, oh, she's the bad guy. And then when he gets there and she's like, oh no, you know, maybe I took that from him or whatnot. And he believes her there for a minute until the whole, you know, bomb thing in the oil pipe.
Yeah.
Which, that sounds kind of dirtier than I wanted it to. Dropping a bomb in the old oil pipe in line. But yeah, he's like,
we've had enough pipeline explosions. Yeah. Impact the Southeast, don't jinx us.
So yeah, it's like the first time of, you know, Bond really, you know, taking something personally.
Yeah. Which, you know, I can't say that it wasn't justified, though. I mean,
I mean, she was trying to tell the guy to, you know, blow up the world, so yeah. Yeah.
You got to make the tough call.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, like, if...
That's why Bond gets paid the big bucks. And by big bucks, I mean pretty much unlimited. Yeah. Everything is taken care of. Like, how the hell do I get that status in life? Like,
just, yeah, and I'm pretty sure that M, if M had got there first, she'd have shot the bitch. Because M's gangster as fuck.
Yeah, like, it's, you know... As... She doesn't really play get a lot of screen time.
Yeah.
But the screen time she does get, like, it's like, I could be your grandma, but I'm going to be the grandma that's going to assassinate your ass for doing some dumb shit and write you off like you never existed.
Yeah.
Like, I could almost see that as Bond's mother, like, straight up, I brought you into this world and made you. I can take you out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and we get more of that with her when we get with the following films and with the Daniel Craig. But yeah, she, James Duty Gents is a badass. Like, you know, people are like, really? You know, the head of the agency's a woman, but she never, you never doubted it, like, after that first year.
No.
Yeah, she was, like, a hard ass dude. Like, all right, yeah, this is definitely a lady that can make those hard decisions.
I mean, you know, through all the turmoil, the doubt, like, once she made a decision, like, that was it. And, you know, it'd be funny because, you know, throughout, people would doubt her decision making, or no, you didn't make the right call. And sure enough, shit would come full circle, and you'll just see her, you know, kind of smirk and be like, "Yeah, motherfucker, what now?"
Oh, and from there we jump into
Die Another Day. Yes,
which this one was a weird one too, because you know the pre-title sequence. Bond goes into, because by this time, I guess, you know, all right, it's all right to make fun of North Korea. We finally found someone it's all right for us to be at war with in, you know, the virtual world.
And everybody agrees. It's like, okay.
Yeah, Bond goes undercover as a diamond salesman to deal with this rogue North Korean Colonel Moon. And when he gets there, someone betrays him and, you know, he gets ambushed because someone has given up his identity. And that's one of the cool, because he has a bomb set in the box full of diamonds. So when that thing goes off, friggin', you know, Moon's right hand man Zhao just gets like friggin' peppered with damn diamond shrapnel. So like the rest of the movie, he's, as you said, shine bright like a diamond.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure, like, you know, we have the technology to pull a diamond out of your face. I don't know why he had to stay bling-blinged up through the whole movie.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of weird, you know, and that was kind of the thing. You know, they go to this hospital in Cuba, you know, off one of the islands, and it's like everything appears to be on the up and up until you find a hidden panel in the wall, and then all of a sudden it's...
Yeah, they're secretly giving...
And they're doing,
giving,
like,
criminals new identities.
Yeah, they're doing DNA transplants.
So, yeah, so it's not only just a face, they completely remove your DNA and stuff and make you a completely new person, so there's no way to detect who you used to be. But this is the movie like where it said Bond got captured and spent like over a year in a North Korean prison camp until they finally, like, you know, got him back as part of some kind of, like, you know,
prisoner exchange. Yeah, well, they traded, you know, the general's son, Shine Bright Like a Diamond Dude, you know, for Bond. And
no, the general's son was Moon.
No, the one that supposedly
died.
Yeah, not the son.
Zhao was the one that got traded. And so they don't, you know, they know that the information was getting leaked somehow, but they don't realize that there's a mole in their own government. They think it's Bond has been broken and given up information. So they, you know, when they get him back, they don't trust him. They kind of treat him as a prisoner, and he has to escape and go rogue. So this is like, you know, which we've seen in some earlier Bonds where, you know, this one, you know, he's on his own. He doesn't have the support of, or at least at the first of the movie, of the government.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, that was the thing, is, you know, the entire time. I mean, you know, when he gets back, you know, where whatever facility where they're going over his vitals and everything else, and, you know, he basically, you know, gets an opportunity to go, you know, speak with M, and it's like, yep, you know, all we know is somebody was leaking information, and you were there for 14 months, and we had to get you out. And it's like, really? You thought I cracked? I talked? Like,
yeah. And he tells you, like, hey, someone in your, you know, someone gave me up. That's how I got caught. So the leak's not from me. It's coming from somewhere else, and they're trying to make it look as me just so that he gets Zhao back. So he has to go out and hunt down Zhao on his own, which winds him up in Cuba. And, like, of course, his contact he goes to is, you know, guy making cigars too, so.
Yeah, like, and I thought that speech was kind of awesome, because he asked for a particular cigar brand. It's like, we haven't made that, you know, particular blend or brand in 30 plus years. And he's like, well, just call your boss.
Yeah. Oh. And then, you know, of course, meeting the lovely CIA agent played by Jinx, played by Halle Berry.
Yes. That was, I don't know, man. Between that and
that whole sequence of her coming up out of the ocean from diving is very much like, you know, Dr. No. That opening sequence where Sean Connery's on the beach and the girl's coming up out of the water. There's so many little nods to the previous films.
But I love where, you know, I mean, just once again, his game is so on point. It's like, oh, so you're a bird watcher.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I like predators. Well, what do predators do? Well, they hunt. And when do they hunt? At night.
Yeah. Drinking mojitos.
Yes. Between coffee and mojitos. Hey, you want a mojito and Netflix and chill?
Oh, but yeah, when he goes in, confronts Zhao, and finds that the diamonds are some kind of like African conflict diamonds, and which were the same diamonds he was smuggling into North Korea. So even though General Moon is dead, he's like, Zhao's up to something, and apparently there's this new, basically Elon Musk type guy, Gustav Graves, who's like the new high-tech communications wizard that, you know, Bond assumes is into some shit. So he goes to confront him at, I think it's badass, like old school England. Like there's still a whole lot of the, you know, Knights of the Round Table yes. type shit going on. So there's actually a fencing club that he goes to, and they get one of the badass, like, you know, friggin' sword fights where a dude just kind of loses his shit.
Yeah. Well, I think it's awesome. You know, like they, you know, they start out the wager at like $1,000 and it's like, all right, you know, first person to draw blood from the torso or whatever. So, of course, you know, Bond loses, and it's like, all right, let's up the stakes. Best 2 out of 3. And
he's like, all right, let's up the weapons, too.
The freaking...
freaking broadswords and shit. Yeah.
And there...
And Madonna is the girl who runs the club.
Yes.
And he meets, you know, Gustav Graves, you know, personal secretary or right-hand businesswoman, whatever... Miranda Frost, who turns out to be a, you know, MI6 agent herself, but also turns out to be a double agent, is really working for Gustav Graves.
Yes, like it, and I didn't necessarily see that flip happening when I first watched the film, because, you know,
yes, between, because,
you know, Miranda and, you know, M's interaction, it's like, you know, I guess it was pretty good foreshadowing had I had read deep enough into it the first go round, because it's like, you know, Bond, you know his ways, you signed up for this, and it's like, yes, I know everything about Bond. So if anybody was going to flip, that would be the person that.
Yeah, because she was like very, like, you know, uptight, frosty, as her name implies.
Yes.
And not having any of Bond shit. Well, after this whole fight in the sword fight, you know. Bond gets a mysterious package, and it's like this key to like a bridge in London, and he goes down there, and it's like a secret old base, and he's like, yeah, and we're basically, you know, M is like,
old agents go to retire.
And he's like, M's like, all right, I believe you, but the government thinks this guy's the greatest thing since sliced cheese, so I can't openly go at him, but a rogue agent who has no official ties to the government can investigate this without any interference. So she set him up with this whole like secret base and got the new Q to hook him up with the freaking cars
Astro and, with the active camouflage and
yeah the that shit was Aston Martin awesome. Vanquish. Yeah, I think the whole like active camouflage thing was like, you know, popular at that time. I mean, it was like that shit was in every movie. I mean, you even see it today, like freaking Shield. Vehicles, but that was like probably one of the first. That and the automated shotguns that would shoot stuff out of the air. And
yes,
freaking Q hands in this giant book of instructions. Like, totally. You should be able to shoot through this in a couple days. And he like throws it right in front of the car, and the car blows up. He's like, I've shot through it, you know, pretty quickly. He's like, damn it, 007. Yeah, and that's kind of because, like, you know, back during World War II. Yeah, there are some, like, you know, old hidden bunkers in like abandoned subway stations and stuff that the British government actually used back in the day. So it's kind of cool seeing that, like, you know, them using those things as this, you know, secret, you know, MI6 bunker that no one knows about anymore.
So yeah, I thought that was pretty sweet, but nah.
And then the whole Ice Palace sequence.
See, that's really where I think Frost, you know, character really shines.
Yeah, because up to that point, you know, you see her playing the part of like, oh, I'm going to be Bond's girlfriend, you know, for cover's sake, but I don't really like this dude. But she sets him up, like, you know, disarms his pistol. So when he goes to rescue Jinx later, who has also gotten caught snooping around, he goes to pull the trigger and nothing happens. She's like sabotages his gun, which, you know, you would think a professional like Bond, that would be the first thing he did was, you know, check his weapon, but... You know, he thought this was, you know, a fellow agent, you know. And
well, I mean, I guess when
it
you
caught him,
you know,
by surprise, just like
it
did the audience.
Pillow, you don't really, you know, assume somebody's going to, I don't know, you would think there would be some rustling or something there to.
So he could have got up, take a piss in the middle of the night, and she could have jacked his gun, you know.
True.
So it was, yeah, just that whole, you know, trusting someone like that, because, yeah, which Bond never does, and it kind of betrayed his ass in the end.
But I kind of like, you know, the you know, between Halle Berry and, you know, Frost's character, like, their interactions, like, between, like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, especially after, you know, freaking Halle Berry's character finds out that Bond slept with, and is like, really? You slept with her?
He's like, it's what I do.
Yeah. It was in my contract.
Yeah. But yeah, then we find out Gustav Graves is actually General Moon, who's gone through the complete transformation process. You know, Zhao's got interrupted, so now he's like, you know, freaking albino dude with like the diamonds.
The diamonds, and then the freaking crazy ass contacts, like, you know.
But the other thing is, like, Moon's character that he created of Gustav Graves is basically him trying to be Bond. I mean, they have similar cars that are similarly outfitted. They're both British playboys and, you know, not afraid to do, like, action sports type stuff. He's, like, basically, like, you know, I want to be you, nearly.
Yep, but just like Icarus got too close to the sun... Your satellite got too big and too close to the Bond.
Yeah, because that's his whole, like, you know, back in the day, like, you know, Bond villains, you know, they weren't just after, like, you know, stealing some stuff or, you know, trying to, because like you said, the three previous Bond villains were basically thieves. They were looking to either make, like, money was their ultimate factor, where this guy kind of was back to that old Roger Moore, Sean Connery days of, this is a dude who's wanting to take over the world.
Yes.
And
disguise it as, oh, we've created this thing to harness the sun's, you know, solar energy, you know, to...
For the benefit of mankind, but really it's a super laser that can wipe out any city on the earth. Or in this case, to wipe out all the mines in the North Korean demilitarized zone so we can invade. And no one can stop us. And we've got this badass super jet that...
Well, not only the freaking superjet, but whatever the fuck the speedster, you know, when...
Oh, the little rocket car that Bond's, like, trying to get away from the laser in?
Like, that was pretty badass.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later on, you know, the freaking car chase and the drifting and everything through the freaking ice palace as Bond is trying to...
Yeah, it's the first time we've ever seen a Bond car on Bond car fight. Yeah. And normally it's like normal cars chasing Bond and he's whipping out all the gadgets and stuff, but this is the first time we've seen Bond battling someone that's like on his own level, nearly. So, or at least similarly equipped.
Yeah. But, yeah, there was a lot of good film. I don't know. I think this, it's kind of, either Tomorrow Never Dies or this one I think is my top two favorites. And I think Tomorrow Never Dies just because there's so much comedic element to it. Like, Bond is just so on point.
So, as we wrap this up, you said what your favorite movies are. I think for me, it's got to be that first one, GoldenEye. Between this and GoldenEye, because I love the reintroduction of Bond, but this one here was so over the top with its action sequences and its plot lines and stuff. That kind of harkens back to the days of, like, Roger Moore and freaking Moonraker and these, like, just over-the-top, ridiculous plot Bond movies. But of all the characters and stuff, have a particular favorite villain or Bond girl or, you know, sidekick?
I don't know. I think it's Halle Berry. You know, I mean...
Gonna go watch some Swordfish?
Maybe. I mean, her skill set and everything else was so on point. I mean, just... You know,
it was a pretty badass sword fight between her Frost.
You know, the facility and everything else, and I mean... I don't know. Either this or just freaking... you know, toward the end where Moneypenny gets the freaking VR device and, you know, is having, like, her, you know, fantasy of, you know, Bond coming in and her being able to, you know, grab him by the tie and, you know, be seduced on the desk and, you know, guy walks in like, hot, isn't it? Yeah, very.
Yeah, that's the thing we didn't know about. Samantha Bond was the new Moneypenny for this generation of films. And it was pretty cool, her, the usual, like, you know, banter between her and Bond through all of them. Like, I remember, like, in GoldenEye, there's one thing, it's like, you know, just like, you know, because like I said, it was all right to be sexist and stuff back in the Connery Moore days. You know, she's like, you know, talking to me like that could be considered sexual harassment. You know, that's something you never heard, like, Bond have to worry about. And he's like, really? So what's the penalty for that? She's like, well, one of these, I'm going to make you, like, you know, go true in all these, you know, innuendos you always say.
But yeah, I just think that light element. And then I guess we should go ahead and let folks to normally this is the part where we would review the cigar. However, since we are still smoking said cigar, we're going to hold off and we'll do our final thoughts toward the end of the Nerd News segment.
Yeah, so I don't know. For me, I loved the inclusion of OGQ and how they kind of said goodbye to him, and you know, new Q wasn't that bad. He was still kind of funny, but just not as good as the original. But yeah, like I said, probably one of my favorite characters was the Russian gangster guy, because that, and even that guy went out like a badass. Like, yes, you know, in The World Is Not Enough, you know, they end up killing some of his, and he actually, you know, gets shot up and saves Bond. Where, you know, this time they'd kind of had this, like, buddy, like, friendship, but they didn't trust each other.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it would not take much for Bond to see him betraying him at some point, because they are, like, you know, Bond's MI6, he's ex-KGB, you know, they were enemies at one time, but when given the opportunity of killing the person who killed his nephew or rescuing Bond, he rescued Bond and kind of gives him that kind of, like, nod. And then Bond kind of gives him like a little nod before he finally dies. Like, all right, I guess we are friends. You know?
Well, and I got to say,
or at least comrades in arms.
We were kind of talking about, you know, Die Another Day, where some of the over top action. And I think probably the most over the top scene is when they're up in the air, they depressurize the plane, you know, everybody's getting sucked out of it and stuff. And you see, you know, the freaking two cars with the helicopter, and they freaking, you know, take the helicopter out of the back of the plane and, you know, complete free fall, like trying to, as they're getting banged up by the plane exploding and debris raining down on them and stuff like that. I was like, that would never happen.
That's almost as bad as the flying tank sequence from A-Team.
Yes. I was like, guys, you're pushing it.
I do like when they finally get the helicopter started and fly off, you see like the swamp with freaking a rice paddy with like
the freaking Lamborghini.
All these cars are stuck sticking up out of the swamp.
The rice farmers out there like, what?
The hell is this? It's raining Italians.
Gotta love those exotic rains.
Oh yeah. And that was speaking of like the cars, because Bond always has iconic cars. I like, even though he has these issued, you know, BMWs and Aston Martins, when you see him in GoldenEye, like in his off time being evaluated, he's driving, he always goes back to that 60s freaking Goldfinger Aston Martin. That's like the iconic James Bond car.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets in that little kind of like race with Xena Onatopp, who's in the brand new flashy Ferrari. And it's like, yeah, you know, it's that kind of, you know, juxtaposition of the new hotness and like classic Bond.
I like that too.
And with that, I think we'll wrap it up and be right back.
I know.
Hey, man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's time for Beer 30. So pour them if you got them. What are we drinking this week, Brad?
Well, this week we are drinking something called the Salty Scott.
I mean, a little shout out to Sean Connery, the OG Bond. Yeah.
So this is brought to you by Parallel 49 Brewing, which is coming from British Columbia, Canada.
Bly Canadians.
Yeah, and you know, so what we've got here is a sea salted caramel Scottish style ale. And you know, I think we've talked about you know, Innocent Gun did a Scottish ale. I think that we've talked about. Yeah. This is an interesting twist with the caramel flavors, the saltiness. I gotta say, man, like between the caramel and the saltiness of the beer versus the, you know, flavor of the cigar, there's just an interesting complexity going on that just fucking works. I can't put it really any more simpler than that.
Yeah, it definitely has like a little bit of a sweetness to it, but then that good caramel malty flavor. I'm trying to eat healthy, but that's one of my weaknesses, is fucking caramel. I will down the shit out of some of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this beer, too, I gotta say, man, it definitely pours a dark copper color. It's got a good lacing to it, nice head. You know, it just, the first beer I've had, I think, from, Parallel 49, and it is really, really good. In fact, it was so good that it took the 2015 U.S. Open Beer Championship gold medal.
Yep. How's it smell? Because my nose is like completely jacked up from I'm still getting over something.
I mean, as far as the aroma, to me, and I'm kind of in that same boat, you know, just between the freaking wildfires that have been going on up north and the smoke rolling in versus being out with the smokers over the course of the weekend and stuff. My sinuses are not, you know, exactly in tune. But I definitely, you know, get a sweet aroma. The caramel is, you know, a note that really kind of comes through.
That little salty bite on the back end kind of gives it a crisp flavor.
Yeah, and it is recommended for this beer to be served, you know, somewhere between the neighborhood of 50 to 53 degrees. So, you know, if you've got it in the refrigerator for a couple of hours, you may want to, you know, let it sit for just a few minutes, let it come up to temperature, and, you know, that way all the flavors and aromas can come together and give you the complete experience that we're having now.
Wow, that almost sounded professional.
Almost, you know, it happens every once in a while.
Oh.
You know, we're sponsored now, so I got to be official.
Yeah. Try's putting some Strike Force in it.
For that added bite.
Going all the way up.
Yes.
So what do you rate this beer here, man, Untappd?
I'm at a 4.5 all day. The only thing I think can make this beer better is just for my sinuses and stuff to be cleared up, because I'm sure that there's some stuff I'm missing on my palate just for the fact of,
I mean, this,
know, getting over.
It's definitely a good cold weather beer. You know what I'd really like to pair this with? Some caramel apple pie. Just like a big slice of caramel apple pie and some salty Scott.
Yeah.
You cannot go wrong with that combination.
I mean, dude, that might be a Rumsgiving treat that we treat ourselves to.
Caramel apple pie and some salty Scott.
I mean, that, tis the season to be thankful.
Tis the season to eat too much and drink too much.
Yes.
And we've already started that early. We, like, you know, we've pre-gamed Thanksgiving.
Yeah, for like the last like 5 years.
Yeah. You know, and this episode will come out, you know, a couple days before Thanksgiving. You know, do yourself a favor and celebrate, like, our favorite made-up holiday, which is called Rumsgiving.
Which we found out isn't so made up, though.
Yeah, because apparently, statistically, the day before Thanksgiving is the time that the most alcohol is consumed per capita in the U.S. Or even might have been worldwide. So, yeah, day before Thanksgiving, we buy some nice, you know, rum or whiskey or whatever. Normally rum, because it's Rumsgiving, and you have a little pre-Thanksgiving celebration with friends before we all have to venture off to deal with our families the next day.
Absolutely.
That's a little pro tip for you.
Yep, definitely. So you know, if you want to check out this beer and other great beers, you can visit Parallel Brewing, our Parallel 49 Brewing online at parallelbrewing.com.
And they've got a few different beers. Like, it's the first time I've had any of their beers, but looking on their website, they got something called Jerk Face 9000, and I want to kind of try that just because of the name. So they've got some interesting marketing. Check that stuff out. And with that, we'll be right back.
Hello, my name is Jay Patrick, and that is Adam.
Hello.
Join us for the Adam and JP Show.
Hello.
Available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Hello.
Get it now.
Hello.
Oh, we're just kidding. If you love comics, video games, movies, wrestling.
Who doesn't? These are all great things that make us who we are.
That's true. Then you should join us for the Adam and JP Show. You actually can get it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Yeah, that part was true.
And right here on the ESO Network.
And adamandjp.com.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for science. You ready to learn all there is to learn, Brad?
Yeah, man. Let's do it. What do you got?
Well, we've constantly warned about the impending robot doom. And, you know, the potential of Skynet to destroy us all. Well, scientists at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, has develop something they're calling Nightmare Machine.
That just sounds crazy. Nothing good can come from Nightmare Machine.
Yeah, basically, it started off kind of as
a bad horror movie plot.
Well, you know, as I've said, and like people like Elon Musk has said recently, you know, the fear of artificial intelligence. So they came up with something kind of as just a concept to see if, you know, not only does AI kind of, you know, scare us as its own concept, but can they design an AI that's specifically designed to scare us? So literally this thing is based off, it's a deep learning algorithm based off, you know, neural networks that mimic the human brain. And it tries to learn what scares us. And then it takes, once they, you know, kind of try to teach it what humans thought were scary, they kind of release it on the net, and it would take images of buildings, faces, whatnot, and then modify them to maximum creep factor.
Interesting.
And you can follow along on Instagram. It's Instagram is nightmare_machine. And I started following it, and some of the images it has posted are batshit. Like, there's one of Kermit the Frog that is one of the most disturbing things I think I've seen recently.
Kermit?
Yeah, this thing is like full-on Walking Dead zombified version of Kermit the Frog, and it's completely insane. And they even did, since, you know, we just recently had election, you know, they went equal opportunity, they nightmare machined a picture of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and Hillary looks a lot like Joker. I mean, it's creepy-ass Joker image of Hillary Clinton. It's spooky.
Damn, that's rather interesting.
Yeah, so what do you think of designing AI specifically to learn from your fears and scare the fuck out of you?
I don't know, man. I feel like there's some kind of, I don't understand. Like, there's so much bad shit already out there. Like, can we do some good shit for a change? Like, let's not try to figure out how to make our bad shit even worse. Let's take this energy and funding and do
something. Download
this
into a robot.
Positive. Yeah. Like,
we'll get our first robotic serial killer.
Yeah. Like,
but then again, from the more artistic side of things, could you imagine a horror movie completely written and directed by a artificial intelligence program?
Yeah. Only problem is this horror movie is our reality. I don't know. I think I'm pretty ready for the zombie apocalypse. I don't know about, you know, some kind of fucking computer virus, though. Like, that's like Terminators with the ability to, like, shape-shift your universe into, like, your worst fear. Like, I don't know. I'm It's almost like Knights of Badassdom in a sense. Like, I guess I just don't understand when nothing good can come of this. Why?
The next Hellraiser puzzle box is an app. And it's just, yeah, a computer opens up a portal to hell.
And, well, so we get it. It's Doom. Then we get Space Marines.
Yeah, there
standard
you
issue BFG 9000s.
All right, if this generates BFG 9000s, I'm down. You know, but yeah, if you don't want, you know, killer robots, this is how we get killer robots.
Yeah, I don't know. Some things I'm just like, really? We spent money on that when we still have famine and poverty and, you know, like fucking people that have served the country, homeless and stuff like that. Like, we haven't figured out how to take care of them yet. Like, what the fuck are we doing sometimes? Like, it just makes no sense.
Well, from killer AIs to RoboCop, we pretty much now could possibly have RoboCop. But not the cool Detroit Sergeant Murphy.
No, of course not. This is going to be RoboCop that summons nightmares.
No. A company has come out with something they're calling Brigade, which is an autonomous vehicle. Basically, we talked a while back before about the robot racing motorcycle. Well, yeah. This is basically going to be a automated patrol vehicle. They're saying it's a combination of red light camera and meter maid that will patrol the streets. And it looks like a motorcycle when it's loaded with stuff like, you know, cameras, speed cameras, license plate readers like you see on the back of some patrol cars that can automatically read your license plate and decide if it's, you know, if there's warrants or if it's, you know, not valid or anything like that. And basically these things will patrol because, you know, now the fear with, you know, automated vehicles is it's going to do away with traffic citations, which a lot of cities depend on that stuff. Well, this is kind of an update for that. Well, this, like I said, will patrol the streets looking for minor traffic violations like expired tags and whatnot, and can then, you know, take photos and send that to a court system, which will then email you a traffic ticket, much like the red light or speeding cameras that we have now. So this is mobile.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's been a lot of challenges to the red light cam stuff, but I don't know. Is this an actual image or a concept image? Because this thing looks like it was designed by BMW. Like, I'm looking at the color scheme here, and this thing just screams like BMW motors.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have a functional prototype yet. This may be just a concept drawing. But one thing, it says even like with speeders, it will, you know, obviously it cannot perform a traffic stop on its own, but if it sees a car speeding, it will follow it and alert it with a flashing light and a speaker telling it to slow down. And if it doesn't, it will continue to follow it and alert a actual police officer to come.
But just wait, what they'll do is insert some kind of chip that sends out a special signal, and this autonomous freaking motorcycle will somehow be able to disable the entire vehicle.
Or somebody's just gonna slam on their brakes and run the thing over.
I mean, that's almost like, oh, I'm like,
we saw what happened
what
to Hitchbot.
Fine, if I take one of these out.
Yeah, we saw what happened to Hitchbot. Yeah, I don't know if we're ready for RoboCop.
No, not at all. Not in this capacity anyway.
Especially something that can't defend itself. Like, yes, people are going to.
You realize
this thing
how many people
road
down here, you know, here in the South, don't really like authority to begin with, and they're all armed. This can't end well.
Well, one of the benefits they're saying of a program like this is it frees up, you know, actual police officers to work on more important things. Because, you know, there's been studies like I'm blanking on the name now, but there was a famous experiment where they determined that random patrols have really no effect on crime rate.
Well, I mean, and once again, I'm going to state the point. Why the fuck are we investing so much money into something when we realized, hey, you're not doing productive shit over here? Why don't we just do away with the shit that isn't productive and, you know, fucking let nature take its course and let's focus on that more important shit?
Like, well, you know, the solution was that, you know, more targeted enforcement had a bigger impact on that, you know, just randomly riding around, really does nothing. It had no effect on the crime rate. But you know, having someone out there doing that to him, you know, at least you know, a show of force, while other officers can you know, work on more high profile crimes or target more crime rich environments, and not having to watch a stop sign on the side of the road when you know, robo bike here can do it for them. Yeah, it frees up some time in the day, so you don't need as many officers out and about. You know, you can do more with less assets if you don't have to cover everything.
Yeah, but if this is handling minor infractions and stuff anyway, then I don't really see this like being a huge like crime stop or anything else. I don't know. I mean, it's defenseless. It's
And then eventually I don't know. The Nightmare Machine takes over, and then they start hunting us down.
Exactly. Like, you know, well, I just, some things boggle my mind, I guess, you know. It is what it is.
Yeah, something shiny boggles your mind.
Well, that usually draws my attention. Ooh, shiny.
Well, yeah, speaking of our, you know, the Nightmare Machines and the RoboCops hunting us down, probably one of the smartest men in the world, everyone can agree on, is Stephen Hawking. And Stephen Hawking recently said in an interview with, he was speaking in front of the, Oxford Union, and says, humans only have about 1,000 years left. We're all fucked.
Is that by our own vices, or?
Or if to say it like Stephen Hawking would have said, you are all fucked.
I have not read the article or anything because I rely on you to educate me. But is this saying that basically, you know, humanity will consume all resources, or we just can't sustain ourselves?
Well, what he's saying is kind of, you know, as we've seen, you know, recently with, you know, climate change and whatnot. He said, you know, the Earth is very, very fragile. And if we don't find an alternative place to live within the next 1,000 years, he assumes we're going to go extinct. And it's
See,
a combination
I almost
of
wonder, like how long has the Earth been around versus humanity? Like, well, if anything, I think the world is probably set. Humanity's just a bunch of fuck ups that's just going to fuck themselves.
The Earth will go on. He's talking about the human race going extinct.
Okay, so that clarifies.
Cause... Yeah, but then the Earth probably will no longer. Yeah, but he basically quoted things like the you know increased risk of nuclear war, as well as the oncoming threat of global warming, and also you know he warned that the development of artificial intelligence could end mankind. And I'm not saying it's aliens, but also aliens.
So I'm not sure. Does thanks Obama still work, or is it now thanks Donald Trump?
Like... Well, he hasn't done nothing yet, so we can't blame him yet. We got to give him another 4 months before we can start blaming stuff on him.
You need the 3/4 majority vote.
But yeah, I mean, but that's one thing he is kind of supporting. It's like, you know, we need to not move away from the space program. We need to keep looking and, you know, at a place to go for the future of humanity. Are you know, as the Earth may
Why?
Not be able
so
to
we
support
can consume and fuck that up too.
Yes. But for another, you know, couple thousand years, that we've, we've gone on for a good long while now, you know, and if things get used up here or the environment just goes too much to shit, you know, we need a, escape plan.
I need a safe space.
In space.
And welcome to Snowflakes in Space. And we just lost 30,000 listeners. Fuck.
But they're, you know, this year, because you know, NASA launched the Kepler spacecraft in 2009, whose mission was to try to find planets like Earth in the Goldilocks zones of you know star systems that could potentially support our style of life. And one of them that they've recently found this year, they're calling Proxima 8, is only 4.2 light years away from Earth and sits kind of in the Goldilocks zone of of Proxima Centaurus. And that may be one of our you know potential future Earth expansions. You know, DLC for the human race, if you will.
Yeah, not in our lifetimes, bub.
Nah.
We're going to take the inevitable dirt nap right here.
I mean, we got to make it to Mars, but yeah. Yeah, 1,000 years, unless we get some good, you know, where I can download my body into the net, you know, like Ghost of the Machine style.
Yeah, but it'll get hacked and your body will just be a nightmare.
Yeah, that'd be my luck. They would invent a way for me to live on by uploading my consciousness to the web, and then the freaking nightmare machine crashes the internet and turns it into like a virtual hell. I avoided real hell and end up in virtual hell. Damn it. Just my luck.
It's a never-ending podcast.
About cheese.
Cheese.
Something boring.
Government-issue cheese.
Dude, government cheese was actually pretty good. That shit made the best mac and cheese because it was very creamy. I'm all for some government cheese.
Government cheese for everybody!
And speaking of another reason why the human race is doomed, is because we keep doing dumb shit. And like more than just us, like podcasting, I'm talking like actual dumb shit. Apparently there's a new thing called hot spotting, where you go to a natural spring and try to get singed dealing with a natural spring. Well,
So like hotspot. It's not like, oh, I'm going to connect to this network over here.
No, it's going and get, oh no, hot potting, not hot spotting, my bad.
Okay. I was getting confused.
Yeah, where you want to go get burned from a some kind of natural spring. Well, back in June,
Why the fuck wouldn't you just put your hand in a pot of boiling water or something?
Cuz that's not, you know, epic enough. You got to go to like, you know, a natural spring and get, you know, burned by the earth. Well, back in June,
water is from the earth.
23-year-old man happened to fall into one of the springs in Yellowstone Natural Park, which has under it one of the biggest magma zones, like potential supervolcano area. So the
I think it is.
Well, it hasn't happened yet, so it's still potential.
It hasn't erupted, but I mean, there's definitely a big ass magma chamber.
Well, recently, due to a filing of a Freedom of Information Act, the actual details of his death has been released, and it turns out that, like I said, the average temperature of the geysers and springs in Yellowstone Forest is close to 200 degrees, and it's highly acidic. So this guy was leaned over a railing or something to dip his finger in the water just to see how hot it is, slipped and fell completely in. And the water was so hot and acidic that they couldn't rescue him right away when they found the body and had to come back the next day, and he was completely gone. Like, the acid and the heat just completely dissolved him overnight.
I think it was Nessie.
Nessie. Lavalantulas.
Yes. Why can't that be a thing? Like, I don't know. I look at this and I say, great, Darwin sorting things out on its own. Let humanity take its course. You do dumb shit, you pay the price for doing said dumb shit.
Yeah, and this is the next generation. So these are the ones that are supposed to save us from impending doom that Hawkins has described.
It'll be okay. They're going to weed.
We're all screwed.
They're going to weed themselves out. We're going to be fine.
So two words of advice for you. If you're going to be stupid, don't. And if you can't listen to rule number one, do not do it in Yellowstone Park. Stick to the rivers and the waterfalls that you're used to. Don't go chasing waterfalls. And with that,
thanks Cards Against Humanity and TLC.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
So we're just going to go ahead and jump into the mix right now. So we have our director for Deadpool 2 now.
Yeah, so who we get?
We got David Lynch. People may know him from such films as John Wick.
Yeah, so I'm kind of excited about that because, you know, I'm not seeing the new John Wick, but just from what little I've seen of it, the freaking action is amazing. Like gunfights all over the damn place, so... Yeah, Deadpool needs a good action director at the helm.
Yes, and, you know, I've seen some of Ryan Reynolds' comments about it and everything. He's super excited and stoked. So, you know, I mean, I thought Tim Miller did a great job, but, you know, wish him luck on his future endeavors. But I'm glad to see that we got another action-packed director that I think's, you know, going to give us a sequel that is definitely going to be worthwhile.
Hails to the year. Just bring me some cable.
Yes. Yeah. That's still the piece of information. Like, I still don't know who they're going to cast.
Well, I mean, they just got a director, so it's kind of hard to cast a movie when you don't have a director yet.
I mean, you know, it is what it is. I don't know. I'm still kind of, you know, feeling Ron Perlman as Cable.
Oh, the Perlman.
Yes. I think we've had that discussion in the past, but anyway, on to a next topic of interest is we got a new trailer for Kong Skull Island. And holy shit. Like, I mean, it almost left me breathless. Like, I was like, this is going to be a fucking amazing movie. It looks
Samuel
so badass.
L. Jackson. Yeah. As like looks like the military commander of the people exploring Skull Island. And I just want to hear him say, I'm tired of these motherfucking gorillas on this motherfucking island.
Yes. Or what was the name of the freaking monsters? The skull... skull...
Oh, the skull smashers or whatever?
Yeah, skull smashers. Like, and, man, it sounded so much better in my head. Now that I hear it out loud, it sounds pathetic.
And John C. Reilly is
call
this...
him whatever you want.
He's, I guess, playing this sailor that's been living on the island with the natives and such, and he just looks like he's completely crazy. I think it's going to give this movie the much-needed kind of comic relief moments where, you know, it can almost get too gritty at times when you do a movie like this.
Yes.
Where I think having that just little bit of levity to break up the intensity of what's looks like going to be happening, I think is going to make the movie that much more better.
Yeah, I mean, just visually, though, it just freaking looks amazing.
Yeah, like, Kong does not look like a CGI.
No.
The technology is definitely
I mean, when
caught
it,
up.
It showed the scenes, you know, he had the two helicopters, you know, in each hand and everything. I was just like, that is the fucking Kong.
Yes. And the supposed creatures that Kong is, like, battling and stuff that live underground on the island. You know, I've heard rumors that this is supposed to be part of some kind of, like, shared universe with Godzilla or something. Or, yeah, are potentially... And they kind of look like, you know, not quite as big, but definitely, you know, reminiscent of the monsters we had.
Maybe these are
Godzilla.
Just the offspring or something.
They're young ones.
You know, because I just... Dude, if they did another King Kong versus Godzilla, like, holy shit.
Do like a new version of King of the Monsters where it's just all the monsters battling. That would be epic.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I've always been a big fan of, kaiju films, so I...
You know, Pacific Rim shows up. Do all kind of crazy shit.
I mean, I didn't really draw that comparison, but... Now that you've mentioned it, this film almost kind of had that, you know, just snippet of, you know, just the way some of the battle scenes and stuff played out. Like.
I'm not sure what time frame this supposedly takes place in, because the last Kong movie we had, like, took place, like, was set in, like, the 40s, I think. But with this one, with the Huey helicopters and such, it looked almost Vietnam-era tech. But, you know, who knows, it may be set in modern day.
Yeah, I mean it. I don't know. It. Let's see. I'm just trying to look real quick. You know, just to see if there's any indication on when the time frame may be. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll just have to wait to see. I'm sure there'll be. You know.
Do we have a release date yet?
Yes, we do. The release date actually happens to be on my birthday, so March 10th, 2017.
Maybe we'll have to do a Kong episode.
Yes. Little King for the Kings. Since both of our birthdays take place in March.
Yeah, that's...
It'll be the looks... King of the Birth Dates.
Yeah, this... Yeah, I wonder if they're going to have the epic bringing Kong back to the U.S. and him climbing the Empire State Building scene.
I don't know. Hopefully they do it better than, I mean, what was it, the last time, basically, they just had him, you know, arms and legs strapped to a helicopter or something like that,
yeah.
Like flying him over.
Yeah, but this definitely looks a little bit more modern, and from all the previews, I really didn't see anything outside of that island, so yeah, this movie may be contained strictly to the island.
Yeah, it may very well end up kind of being like a Jurassic Park, if you will, you know. And I gotta say, I was really happy with Jurassic Park. So, you know, we'll just have to wait and see what's in store.
Play some Donkey Kong.
Just to get in the mood. Fucking Donkey Kong. Yes, that absolutely needs to be a thing. And we'll switch gears a little bit and talk about our favorite Time Lord, the Doctor.
Who?
Exactly. So, you know, every year there's always the Doctor Who Christmas special, probably one of the, you know, I always look forward to the Christmas special episodes. And, you know, this year I thought was kind of interesting because they're actually going to be doing a theatrical release of the Christmas episode in select theaters. We'll post a link to where people can type in the location and find it. We have a location about 20 minutes from our house. So, you know, one of the benefits of going and seeing it in theaters is there's going to be, you know, two exclusive bonus features. Don't exactly know what they are or what that means as of yet, but I think it would be really awesome to see Who on the big screen.
Yeah, I definitely want to check that out. And speaking of Who, I went to see Doctor Strange last week, and there's this little segment that almost was like a crazy Who reference, because when he meets like the bad guy, he calls him something. He's like, actually, it's Doctor. And he's like, ah, Mr. Doctor. Well, he's like, it's Strange. He's like, eh, it's not that bad. I've heard worse. It's almost like a Doctor Who.
Yes, almost
joke.
Like, you know. but, you know, to, you know, segue is we also got a sneak peek within the last couple of days of the Xmas special.
Yeah, and it looks a little weird. I mean, there's like a superhero called the Ghost.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's going to be interesting seeing the Doctor deal with a superhero.
I don't know. I think it'll be awesome. I don't know. I don't know if tickets are quite on sale yet, but I am going to go to buy tickets and see if I can get mine reserved. And switching gears once again. So we've talked a little bit about the Han Solo standalone film. Well, we now know that Emilia Clarke has now been casted to join.
Have we got any kind of indication of
no,
who she's playing?
Her character is still undisclosed, so we don't know.
Underclothed. Yeah. Little Freudian slip there.
Maybe. You know, flashback to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, because I know the old expanded universe no longer is canon, but there was an original books before they started releasing all the novels called the Han Solo Adventures. It was a 3-part series about, like, you know, early Han Solo, how he became who he is and how he eventually led to the rebellion. And in that story, there were two female characters. There was one that was basically like his girlfriend that he rescued, who went off to basically join the rebellion and end up duping Han into helping her in some kind of scheme that, you know, where they were going to steal all this money from a hut. And it turns out like she was stealing the money to fund the rebellion and end up, you know, shorting Han on it all. And so, I mean, if they go that route, that could definitely be a good character for her. Or there was a magician that he teamed up with for a while in some of these books. So
yes,
there's definitely more than one. Han was a playboy before he met Leia. So there's, you know, if they kind of take inspiration from some of the early, you know, works about the early life of Han Solo, they could definitely cast her as some of those characters, or like, yeah, I said, maybe something completely original. We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, there's been a plethora of castings. I mean, you know, just we talked a few episodes back about Donald Glover being cast as Lando. You know, we got Phil Lord and Chris Miller from 21 Jump Street and the Lego Movie. So, you know, it's going to be quite a robust cast.
Now I just want to see him recreate the famous Colt 45 ads that Billy Dee Williams did.
Yes, that would be freaking awesome. But for the Game of Thrones fans out there, you know, it has been reported that, you know, Emilia Clarke joining this project is not going to interfere with anything to do with Game of Thrones.
Which, so, that's kind of wrapping up anyway. So.
Yes, that's the thing. You know, most of the TV production stuff wraps up by the end of the year. So, You know, it's not going to be like there's a conflict of schedules or, you know.
And she was, like, other than Game of Thrones, the only thing I've seen her in was that Terminator Genesis. And I liked her as Sarah Connor. She's definitely can be a badass. So I'm looking to see what she can do in the Star Wars universe.
Absolutely. And speaking of a universe, we're going to shift gears and go to the Marvel universe. So, you know, originally we reported that, you know, everything through like the year 2020 that Marvel had planned as far as theatrical releases was, you know, documented. Well, there was a project called Marvel's Inhumans, and they were looking to do a full theatrical film. However, that is no longer the case. It looks like it is now going to be created as a ABC TV series. And I don't really know how I feel about that. Like,
you mean Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Because that's about what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has become, the Inhumans.
Like, I just feel like with S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything else, like, I think with the Inhumans, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. is great. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I've really been, you know, we've talked about this, you know, with the Marvel Netflix stuff being so great. Like, I think there's a lot more flexibility with, like, a Netflix versus a, you know, ABC production.
Yeah, that, and if they're going with the full comic book Inhumans, which is like a certain family of royal family of the Inhumans, they're doing so much with Inhumans on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. If they were not going to release that movie to 2020, that's a long time to be dealing with Inhumans without getting into the, you know, actual Inhumans. That,
yes.
So I think by turning it to a TV series, they're going to be able to cut that time frame down a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing, as you know, the S.H.I.E.L.D. timeline has progressed rather quickly, you know. I mean, you know, really before it was, all right, we're, you know, working for the government, oh, now we're our off branch, now we're back working to the government, and oh, look, now we got all these people with superpowers. So, you know, it happened relatively quick. So, you know, from that standpoint, yeah, maybe, you know, speed things up, and that way it's not, we're going to deal with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Inhumans for 3 years and then get this theatrical release or whatever the case is. So, yeah, it may be a smart move. I don't know. I feel like, too, that just TV production, just I feel like oftentimes there's just a tight box. And, you know, I like some of the darker, grittier stuff. And most of the time you don't find that with too many, you know, TV series.
Yeah, and I've almost finished Luke Cage. I got like two more shows to go, and just that. Yeah, I like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but yeah, that Netflix model of these Marvel releases is just so much so badass without the constraints of, you know, modern network censors.
Yeah, and I've even heard rumors, you know, circulating within the last, you know, week or so too, that, you know, Disney may be trying to buy out Netflix.
Like, yeah, if that happened, yeah, I'd like to see. Because yeah, right now, the MCU's under one executive, and Marvel TV's under a different executive. I would like to see more interaction with the two properties. You know, right now, they kind of have, you know, they'll usually have at least one episode per season that deals with the aftermath of what happened in the movies. But the movie, the TV stuff goes so much quicker than we get the releases on the movie stuff. So it's really hard for them to connect,
yeah, you know, but really I'd create that collaboration.
I'd like to see them bring in, you know, at least some of the TV characters into the movie universe, you know, even if it's just like, you know, referencing them.
Yes,
that's one of the arguments I've heard with Luke Cage on this, is like, well, why isn't S.H.I.E.L.D. showing up to check out these people with powers? Well, the Netflix series has done a good job about this is only taking place in one area of New York, where yes. S.H.I.E.L.D. is worried about worldwide global threats. You know, Daredevil, Luke Cage, Kilgrave, all these people are kind of really off their radar because they're only impacting the streets
in
New York
and
not
things,
like a worldwide
threat. They're peons.
Yeah. They're the B team.
Quit calling the A team.
Dun, 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 dun. But there was rumors there for a while for like a Hawkeye Netflix series, and I'd like to see that character develop more. That would be, and Jeremy Renner is freaking hilarious as
yes.
Hawkeye. So yeah, I'd like to see them do a Hawkeye Netflix series.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of talking about television productions, you know, since we're not going to have an episode come out before this happens, is, you know, folks, be sure to set your DVRs or whatever to make sure that you don't miss, you know, Supergirl and, you know, preparation for the upcoming big DC.
Yes, starting the week after Thanksgiving. So this episode will go up the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. The following Monday, they're doing a big 4-part crossover event, which will start on Supergirl on Monday and follow through with Flash, Arrow, and Legends. So all the characters from all the shows are going to be on Ever Belts' show for like the entire week.
So just wanted to make sure to notate that, because I know that I've been doing a pretty good job keeping up with live TV, but, you know, with the holiday schedules and stuff.
Yeah, I've gotten caught up on everything except Supergirl. I'm working on getting that caught up before Monday's big release.
And then, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, so one of the things you and I had talked about, you know, we were super excited, was the NES Classic Edition, you know, coming
yes.
out. And, you know, I was really hoping that it wouldn't be a big supply issue. Of course, it was. And, you know, if you go on eBay, hell, I've seen these things advertised as expensive as like $6,000. I don't know that anybody's actually bought one at that price.
That, but I've heard,
you know, fucking scalpers.
Rumblings on the internet that even like Walmart.com and stuff were like advertising these for $200 just because they were so limited.
Yes. So
doing some Prouch gouging mofos.
You know, one, you know, I kind of, you know, the debate is Nintendo really this stupid, or is this an artificial supply shortage just designed to create profit and propaganda? So there's a little bit of a conspiracy there.
I think, you know, it was kind of a novelty system. Yeah, you know, I don't know if they realized the craze it was going to cause for that, for the nostalgia factor. But then again, with just about anything, when PS4, Xbox One, when they first hit the shelves, there's always a shortage until production gear, you know, gets fully caught up with the demand.
But I, you know,
it's before Christmas. I mean, it's right here, like, you know, early thing. I'm assuming by Black Friday, these things are going to be flooding the freaking streets.
Yeah, maybe, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, I almost wonder if the, you know, video game conglomerates realize that, oh, if we only release a quarter of the production, then, you know, people's going to pay outrageous markups and everything, more so. I mean, it's almost like my gripe with, you know, video games now and everything, you know, in-game purchases and all that type of stuff that we talked about during the last episode. Like, I mean, I understand you got to make money, but, you know, in the end, like, fuck, stop fucking your gamers. Like,
yeah.
Shit.
I mean, it's one thing you're going to go to, like, a full, like, downloadable, you know, model, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
If I'm getting
I mean,
a physical item, I want that physical item to be complete.
I mean, you know, for somebody like me that I would consider myself very much tech savvy, is this is the exact reason why I typically gravitate toward Raspberry Pi and playing emulators and ROMs.
It's one thing if you're going to... Let's say a game comes out now. Year from now, when the game is kind of, like... Yeah, everyone who wanted to play it has played it. Yeah, instead of releasing a brand new game, drop me an expansion pack. You know, the expansion packs were things, you know, in computer games and stuff. All, you know, so it's not a new model. But this, where it comes out now, and 2 weeks from now, there's another DSL and
our
like
DLC.
A monthly DS. Fuck, whatever.
The beer has taken hold.
Yeah. But the fact that, you know, new stuff is coming out for these games, like, you know, weeks or months after I bought it, is kind of ridiculous, because you know that shit was already in production. Why not just finish the damn game instead of now? For now, like, a $50 game is now a $100 game, because you also have to buy the
four
the
additional
season pass.
Expansion packs. Yes.
Yeah, that costs as much as the game itself. It's kind of ridiculous.
If only we could just get a complete video.
Or we're
release.
Just grumpy old men at this point.
Maybe.
Damn kids, get off our lawn.
Yeah. I'm sick of you and you precious snowflakes. Get out my heat gun.
Back in my day, the game was complete when you bought it.
And it took real skill.
Oh, yeah. No save points in our days.
No.
You either
our
finish that game
slots.
Or you freaking start over.
And that'll pretty much conclude Nerd News, unless you got anything new.
Final thoughts on the Amazon Basin cigar here?
This has been a phenomenal cigar. I've got to admit, this is not my first time having the cigar, but I gotta say, I really dig it. You know, this is one I'm gonna look forward to, you know, each time it's released.
Yeah. And one thing we didn't talk about when we talked about earlier was the unique labeling of the cigar. There's no band. There's nothing on it that says CAO. Instead of a cigar band, it has
like
basically
a braided
tobacco leaf wrapped around it where the band would traditionally be. So it's a band you don't have to peel off when you're smoking. You can just smoke right through it. And I've heard from people that the flavor slightly changes when you if you smoke it through the band. It adds a little bit to the cigar.
I'm going to have to give that a try because I'm getting pretty close to it.
Yeah. Just smoke till your knuckles get warm. That's my philosophy on cigars. And
well,
also,
depending on how you hold said cigar.
This is coming out, Black Friday is going to be this weekend. So check your local cigar retailers for, Black Friday specials on, accessories, whatever. But also, our local shop, the cigar shop, where we get most of our cigars, has a Black Friday special. There is a special release cigar called the Diamond Crown Black Crown.
Black Diamond.
Yeah, Black Diamond. That is only being released on Black Friday. This is a cigar that has been 10 years in the making. The tobacco in the cigar has been aging for 10 years before it hits the shelf. And it's only going to be available in certain Diamond Crown lounges, which our cigar shop is one and probably the only one in the state to get this cigar. And it was a collaboration going way back from the Fuente family and the J.C. Newman family. So Carlos Sr. had a part in the cigar, and he is no longer with us. So this is, probably one of the last things he had a part in the creation of. So it's going to be a interesting thing to try and smoke.
Yep. So while you people are out fighting the crowds and doing that thing, I'm going to be comfortable with my ass plastered on a couch.
Yeah, the only Black Friday shopping I'm doing is going to be cyber Black Friday shopping because I am not fighting a store.
Yeah, unless I find, I don't know, I am in the market for, some new arms. So if, I find
I do need a new laptop. So.
Exceptional,
maybe,
weapon still somewhere, I might take a chance. But, as far as a mall or a Walmart or anything to that extent, count
and if you
me
need
out.
Some energy to get you through your Black Friday shopping, StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code Cigar Nerds for 20% off your order. And with that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com, or we're members of the ESO Network. Check us out on ESOPodcast.com. You can get shirts. Christmas is coming up. Check out our Zazzle store. Links to that on our Facebook page and our website. And RealMenSmokeCigars.com/CigarNerds for your Cigar Nerd smoking shirts.
And that is the thing, too. At the beginning of the show, we play an ESO Amazon promo. Folks can order through the Amazon site to support, the podcast network and everything.
Just go to ESOPodcast.com, click on the banner for the Amazon, and that will take you right to regular Amazon, but we get, kind of credit for, all that sales that generates through that link. So help support the network by, doing your online shopping through that portal. And with that, no nerd quote for you this week. Just happy Thanksgiving, eat a bunch, and have a good holiday. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.